Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Adam Bingen. Nick Keys are here with you on this Thursday morning. And as we do every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, brought to you by the NFL Alumni Association. Charles, good morning. How are we doing?
Robbie, Adam, how you guys doing this morning?
Doing awesome. Good. Appreciate you. This is week number two of vacation for Joe Rexrow, Charles. So just kicking his feet back up, relaxing.
Yeah, I'm all stuffed up. Like, I just like the Jordan flu game, and this guy's still on vacation. Come on, what's going on?
Just living his best life out there. So, Charles, we've talked to you about the gambling part of this with the NFL multiple times now at this point, and yet here again, the Titans get popped last week, and Nicholas Petit-Frere suspended the first six games of the season for betting on the team's Wi-Fi. It was not betting on the NFL, but was at the team facility, and now the Titans are without their starting right tackle for the first six games. My question to you is, do you think that the message is now going to be received by NFL players? Have we seen the last of this? Or do you anticipate this still being a problem moving forward?
You know, I want to say no, but I guess here's my thing. I was talking to an executive last week, and you know, he said, "I guarantee you, it's going to continue to happen because players at this point are just obstinate." Like, you know, basically what he said to me was, they had this internal discussion about, you know, okay, we're going to talk to guys obviously when they get in for camp, but as they kind of went around the table, and it was some execs and some of the coaches, you know, it was brought up like, this is too late. Like, we can't wait. We can't wait until guys get in to do this. We need to hammer this home now and repeatedly. And I don't know if – I think, like, the policy at this stage, you know, and especially for teams, it just has to be like, just don't, period. Don't do it. Don't, you know, whether it's on our Wi-Fi, whether you're gambling on the NFL or not the NFL, whether you're gambling on college or, you know, if you're going to do this, you're going to get in trouble. And whether it's on your phone, whether it's on someone else's phone, whatever it may be, it's going to end up badly for you. Because I don't think, in terms of the NFL, and I do think this is what teams are trying to get across to players, they're not getting less detailed on this. You know, they're not just sitting there. And we talked about this before, and I made the point that, like, the NFL can't wait for gambling outfits to do the job for them, for gambling outfits to red flag players and say, you know, hey, you got some activity here. It looks like you might have a problem. They have to get more aggressive. They are. And they've told teams, you know, we're being more proactive about this, and you have to be more proactive about this. And, you know, if players don't see this or understand this now, I don't see what the, if they don't get it by now, they're never going to get it, and they don't want to get it. And it's one thing to lose. And look, losing a right tackle, a starting right tackle, a huge deal here.
Yeah.
You know, but we've also seen players who, you know, there are players, you know, you look at the Colts kid. I mean, you get to a stage where a career is going to be thrown away. You know, players are going to get popped betting on their own team. They're never, ever, after this, after everything that's gone on, they're not going to have a career in the NFL. And there's just no excuse, you know, for it. And the same executive, you know, he said, look, part of this too, there has to be a culture of shame, not only from the top down, but inside the locker room. Like, you have to get to a point where players are looking at each other going, if you do this, you're screwing over all of us. You know, if we don't have you and you're a key starter on our offensive line, we can't sit there and go, geez, what a joke. That's ridiculous that you got popped for that. That's, you know, you have to have players looking at other players saying, if you do that, it's akin to undercutting us too. You know, it's not just about, you know, disappointing the head coach or the general manager or the owner or the league at large. You're disappointing us. And you know, it's a culture shift, and I think I'm surprised it's taking this long. And again, I think the attitude is it's going to take even longer than this. I don't understand why, you know, this would continue to happen after we've seen the wave after wave of suspensions we have, but I really can't explain it. And to me, I would like to hear players explain it. And that's one thing I want to ask when I go out on my camp tour is like, what's missing here? What am I missing? How am I not understanding this at this stage? And I'd like to hear what the answers are for that.
Well, I would too, because I mean, Charles, one of the things that we've talked about with the Nicholas Petit-Frere situation is, you know, he released a statement after the fact, basically saying that the rules weren't clear to him. And I'm thinking to myself, I mean, how is that possible? Have we not seen what's been going on throughout the league with all this stuff?
Yeah, I don't, the whole idea of like the rules not being clear anymore. It's interesting to me because we're already entering territory where when there would be PED suspensions and you would get the typical, well, I didn't know, you know, I took this, I didn't realize there was a banned substance in it. And the teams, when players would come at them with this, they would say, we have people here, whatever you're going to put in your body, all you got to do is bring it by. They'll tell you. And whether or not there's something in here that's on the banned substance list, and it stops being a viable excuse. And let's be honest, when we hear a player say that, we just roll our eyes. I'm like, yeah, whatever, man, that's BS. Like, we're going to keep hearing this over and over, the same old, oh, I didn't know this was banned, or I didn't know this thing was in this, or whatever. Like, at some point, we shifted with PEDs to looking at players and going, that's on you. Now that's on you. You have everything at your disposal. You have teams that can explain whether or not you should be putting this in your body, and you're ultimately making this decision. Most of the time, we assume that they're lying anyway, that they, you know, that they were doing something they weren't supposed to be doing. They knew it. They knowingly, you know, entered into the situation. It's going to get that way with gambling. No one's going to buy this I didn't know stuff anymore. They're going to go, no, you knew. You did it anyway. You didn't care. And now you got to pay the price. And no one's going to want to hear it. So I don't, 6 months from now, a year from now, if someone's saying, I didn't know, no, none of us are going to believe that. It's just not going to be believable anymore. And no one's going to care. And everything's going to shift onto the player if it's not already there now. And that's just, you know, how it's going to be. You can't blame the teams in the league forever. At some point, is it really worth? That's another thing, too. How much do you need to gamble to make yourself feel, what, alive? To be entertained? You can't make the kind of money or have the kind of opportunity that's at the fingertips of some of these people who are being caught doing this and not question why. Is there nothing else you can do that doesn't put your career in jeopardy? You know, like, what are you going to look at this like cliff diving? Don't go and cliff dive. You're on vacation. You could kill yourself. You could end your career. You could destroy your family. You could irreparably damage how many decades of work to get to this point. So you don't do it. That's how this should be looked at. This is something where you're putting everything at risk. Stop. There's no reason to do it. You can find some other outlet that doesn't put everything on the line. And by the way, I think we talked about this last week, the week before, how much is worth it? Like, what is the risk? Why? I think of Calvin Ridley, and he came out and he said, well, it was a $1,500 parlay. Well, that's a stupid thing to risk a year suspension, never getting that money back for a $1,500 parlay. Like, what return is worth the risk? There is none.
Yeah, it's a great point. Charles, we were talking about this earlier in the show. The Titans, it's funny looking into this because there is a wide variety of opinion on what the Titans could be. There are some who think that they can challenge for the division with Jacksonville and they're going to be in the 9-10 win neighborhood. And there are some that think they're just going to be absolutely terrible. I mean, I've seen some people talk about 3-14 with the Tennessee Titans. So I guess, number one, how do you view that? And how do you view Vrabel heading into this year? He's on a 7-game losing streak. There was, whether intentionally or unintentionally, a power struggle that he's now won, and he's got more power and more say in this whole thing with John Robinson being fired and Rand Carthon coming in. So how do you view the Vrabel part of this heading into this season and where this team is?
Well, in terms of the Vrabel part of it, I don't want to disparage John like to an nth degree at this point, but I think when we go back and we look at the draft record, okay, and we look at what happened with some of the risks that were taken, I don't think his draft record, stood up to. I think there's viable reasons to look at the John Robinson situation and go, yeah, there's. I understand. I get why he lost that power struggle. Okay, there were a lot of misses. There was a lot of gambling, for lack of a better term. I mean, he risked things on a number of picks that went badly for him. Okay, and guys that didn't pan out. And I'm not saying they were all L's. Obviously, he had his W's in there too. But I tend to believe guys who have runs of bad drafts, especially at the general manager position, there's very little that's more damaging than that, and that will ultimately get you fired, unless you do like, you know, the Giants Kenny Golladay deal, where you go out and you blow out a free agent. He literally contributes nothing. I'm not even going to put that on Vrabel. I think there are reasons why John Robinson was fired beyond just the communication with ownership, right? Beyond just whether or not he and Mike Vrabel were always on the same page. There were personnel issues on top of that. And that'll grease the skids pretty quickly. But do I think it puts additional pressure on Mike Vrabel? Sure. You don't survive something like that and walk out of it with added power and not have the pressure to produce on the other side of it. In terms of, where the Titans are going next season, I don't know. There's so many wild cards when you look at the AFC South. I don't know what Bryce Young's going to do. When it comes to the Texans, when it comes to the Colts, you have a couple rookie quarterbacks, obviously, Anthony Richardson that's there with Indianapolis. You have a couple of, guys that could turn the franchise pretty quickly, for both of those teams. And I think at this stage, it's hard to, stare at either team and say, I know definitively, what those teams are going to look like until we've seen them get on the NFL field and throw a football. I mean, the way the Colts are talking, and by the way, I said Bryce Young, I meant CJ Stroud. I'm still thinking that they drafted him
yet.
Yeah, right. CJ Stroud, obviously, and Anthony Richardson. I want to see whether or not these are transformative quarterbacks. And I'm not ready to say that, at this stage, the Colts are wrong for believing Anthony Richardson can be this guy who can step out there in game one. No matter, there's a lot of people that disagree with him, think that this is a kid that needs a year. I don't know. I thought that with, when Cam Newton entered the NFL, it was funny, I was talking to a guy about this the other day. I was like, I had my doubts, about Cam contributing right away, even with the monster season he had in Auburn. And then I watched Cam Newton game one his rookie year, and I was like, oh my God, that's completely wrong. This guy is going to light the league up, and it's going to change things for Carolina almost instantaneously. Maybe Richardson's got that kind of ceiling. Maybe Stroud can continue the success he had at Ohio State. It remains to be seen, but I think that will factor in. As far as Jacksonville's concerned, the stars are all aligned. The only thing that makes me nervous about Jacksonville is, you've already got an offensive line suspension with Cam Robinson, obviously, is a big deal. We're assuming that, the next big step is going to be taken by Trevor Lawrence. No one is staring at Jacksonville right now and going to miss them, which we were coming out of the Urban Meyer failure. We didn't know what Jacksonville was going to look like last year. Now all the expectations are there. Everybody's assuming Jacksonville's going to walk with the division. We don't know that yet. And then with Tennessee, I want to see this. Is there still something there with Tannehill? I want to see, does Derrick Henry, is there still something there? They still have, talented players. Treylon Burks, from what I hear inside the organization, they think that this guy's going to be a superstar. Like he has had an off season that they were pushing everything in on. Like, we really have to see him. Everything that we had hoped last year, obviously we didn't have him at full strength for a large portion of the off season this season. Now they're where they're like, okay, yeah, this is what we drafted this kid to be a star. I think they think he's on that track. So, I don't know. It's the off season. We all have, strong opinions, and we think teams are, going to do X, Y, and Z. And it always changes once the season starts. So, I mean, look, everybody thinks the Detroit Lions are potentially going to make a Super Bowl run this year, right? Last year, we were like, we were in the season, and I'm like, oh, coach staff's going to get fired. Like, this is really bad for Detroit. So, everybody's just got to, you know, sit back a little bit and realize that, you know, it's not a cakewalk for Jacksonville. There's two huge wild cards in Indianapolis and Houston. And, you know, Tennessee had a down year last year, but they still have, you know, key veteran players, and they have a really, 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 really good young wide receiver who I think is going to take a big step forward this year.
A mighty team that will not yield.
Yeah, we're not done yet. Relax.
That's right. We'll have more with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, Nick Keyser here with you. We've got more with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, brought to you by the NFL Alumni Association.
Charles, I read something really interesting on The Athletic yesterday that no head coach has led two different teams to Super Bowl victories in NFL history. I've just, based on the history of the NFL, when I saw that, it kind of blew my mind. You would figure that there would have been one coach who had led multiple teams to a championship. But I'm asking this in relation to Sean Payton, who, of course, is returning to the NFL to coach the Denver Broncos. And the headline in the story in The Athletic is, what does success look like for Sean Payton in year one with the Broncos? So I'm going to ask you that exact question. What does success look like for Sean Payton in year one with the Broncos?
Yeah, I mean, to your previous point, I mean, Andy Reid should have.
Yes.
He should have punched one in with the Eagles. And then, you know, obviously.
That is true.
Kansas City. Yeah, it's a surprise. It really is. It's a stunning statistic. I was, you know, I think I brought this up. I was trying to remind people the Detroit Lions also had Bill Belichick and Don Shula were assistant coaches in that organization. And I'm like, you know, there are many surprising realities amongst coaches over the history of the NFL. Look, for me, for Sean Payton, here's the interesting dynamic in Denver, okay? You have a front office and a personnel staff that they won't say it publicly, but they're sitting there going, okay, well, we kind of feel like we have this season to sort of, for lack of a better term, prove ourselves to ownership that we're able to work with Sean and that this somewhat disjointed fit of Sean coming in, now being sort of the star of that organization, overshadowing George Payton at this point. A lot of heat on George Payton, the general manager there, for the contract that was given to Russell Wilson, the hiring of Nathaniel Hackett, which was obviously a mistake. You know, there has to be an element of redemption there for the personnel staff and the ability to work with Sean Payton. So I think for Payton, the success is not having to overhaul, number one, the front office. And it is the pressure is more on the personnel staff to be able to mold itself, you know, in a workable situation with Sean. But you don't want more upheaval there. So you want to have enough success with your personnel staff that shows that, hey, this can be a profitable relationship moving forward. Now, that's number two on the list. Obviously, number one, though, is they're not getting rid of Russell Wilson, okay? Not without burning the organization to the ground with the contract extension that he's got in hand. So you have to be able, as Sean Payton, to show I can make Russell Wilson the viable commodity that they extended. He is worth the money. He's worth the assets. He is the player that the Denver Broncos, you know, hoped they were getting, believed they were getting, and then paid like, you know, the top, you know, 2, 3, 4 quarterback that they expected to have in the fold for the next several years. If he can do that, I think Broncos fans and I think ownership, let's say they don't even make the playoffs this year, but let's say the Broncos go 8-9, Russell Wilson looks like the Russell Wilson of old. Everybody there, I think, will be fine with it. I think they'll go, okay, the biggest thing was just showing that Russ was salvageable, and we can figure out the rest, you know, as we move forward. I don't think, you know, Payton has to light the world on fire out of the gate. It'd be great if he did, But the worry there that remains now that Hackett's out the door is, was Russ a Hackett problem or is Russ a Russ problem? Is Russ, did the front office just completely blow it with this guy? That's the number one thing that Sean's got to figure out, because it's just not a player. I mean, you don't have any other options there. He has to fix Russ. And if he doesn't, nothing's going to go right in that organization until, you know, they can figure out a way to untether themselves from that deal. And simply put, I've looked at that contract up and down. There's no way to do it, you know, for at least the next, I would say probably 3 years. They're absolutely, you know, strapped to Russ. So it's, you know, I personally think they're going to be fine. I think Russell Wilson is going to be fine. I do think the vast majority of this was a Nathaniel Hackett issue. I defended the guy for the longest time. I had to stop because every week I was just like, I can't keep doing this. And then once he was out the door and I had a chance to talk to people about what was really going on, it was far worse than anything I realized. And he was, and I don't want to pile on him again here because I think he's going to be fine with the Jets as an OC, but he was vastly in over his head as a head coach.
Charles, last thing for you here. As you know, I follow the Green Bay Packers very closely. I'm curious for your thoughts on the team that they have with Aaron Rodgers out and Jordan Love in. Still lots of talent on the defensive side of the ball. They have Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs. What do you think the Packers are this year in Jordan Love's first year?
You know, it's obviously, I'm not breaking any news here when I say that a lot of what happens next in Green Bay is going to be, you know, what does Jordan Love look like? And I think it's interesting because every time the coaching staff, they got to stop asking players what they think of Jordan Love. Every time you talk to people in the coaching staff, they're like, okay, we just got to hold off. You know, it's let's not put too much on him. Let's have realistic expectations. They've clearly seen something in the development of Jordan Love that leads them to believe that even now, what, you know, 3 years in, this continues to be a guy who's a work in progress. And so I think I would be more surprised if Jordan Love came out and lit it up. Now, that's with, like you said, they have a pretty good roster. I mean, Christian Watson is, there's no doubt he has this explosive ability. When you ask them about Christian Watson, they're like, we just want to see some consistency. Like, for him to be a viable piece for us, it can't just be, well, he scores 80-yard touchdowns. You know, he scores 60-yard touchdowns. We need all the intermediate stuff. We need the short stuff. We need an element of consistency there where he's just not a home run hitter. We need to hit him. We need him to hit for average as well. So, you know, they like him. You know, they think he's the number one receiver. He's just got to show it. They're high in Jaden Reed, the kid coming out of Michigan State. You know, when you talk about Romeo Doubs, that's another guy that, again, young, still got a lot of development ahead of him. Probably does not bode well that you're sitting there going, okay, well, Jordan Love's got a lot of development in front of him. We got a couple of second-year wide receivers that got a lot of development in front of them. We got a rookie wide receiver in Jaden Reed. We got a rookie tight end. These are like all their starters. So without Rodgers there, I would predict, you know, offensively, there's probably going to be mistakes. There's going to be, you know, problems and growing pains that they're going to go through. And, you know, and then you look at the NFC North, it's there to be taken. I mean, you know, Minnesota seems to be, you know, in kind of a weird micro rebuild, you know, when you, obviously let go of running back and Dalvin Cook, there's a little bit of an odd, you know, schism there, I think, in the organization in terms of, are they, you know, still built to win now? Was last year they caught a lot of green lights and they know it, or are they trying to retool this offense on the fly? The Bears, Justin Fields, if he takes a huge step forward that a lot of people seem to think he can, the Bears can become viable really quickly. And as we talked about, the Lions are everybody's kind of hot team in that division. So it's not like, it's not a situation where they're sitting there staring around and going, man, we're outclassed by a number of organizations here. We got a lot of work to do. Everyone's in flux. You know, the defense, if they can stay healthy, there's a lot of really great young talent there. You know, Rashawn Gary, Quay Walker, you know, Devontae Wyatt. They have, there's a lot to really love there. Jair Alexander, who's, you know, one of the best corners in the game without a question. But still, I just think offensively, what is Jordan Love going to look like with a lot of pieces that he's throwing to, you know, rookies and second-year players that are still developing so much? I would predict that there's probably going to be some offensive struggle together, and it's going to be a sub-500 team. I would be surprised if they were anything more than that, just because of all the strides they're going to need to take without having a proven commodity like Aaron Rodgers there pushing guys. Jordan Love's not going to be the same kind of experience.
Well, Charles, really good stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. And I promise you, Joe Rexroad will be back from vacation next week.
I look forward to telling him about the head cold that I dealt with this week. I apologize for losing my voice and trying my best to breathe through one nostril. I'll be back next week feeling in better shape, I promise.
That's right. Charles, have a good weekend, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care, Jeff.
All right, Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest here on Robbie and Rexroad. Lots to react to there from Charles. We'll get into that coming up next. Take your thoughts on the Titans as well. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, the game.